And now it's time for the Wildside News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Believe it or not, as we get ready to celebrate the 40th anniversary of America's wilderness system, we have to realize it's been millions of years in the making. When we return, we look at wilderness past, present, and future here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Hello again. It's September 2nd. It seems some things don't change. The war continues, politics stays brutal, and the rest of us go to work and try to get along. We have a lot to be thankful for. When we remove the mists of terror that seem to waft across our spirit and visions, today we have the chance as Americans to feel good. I mean really good. You see, today is the eve of the 40th anniversary of the signing of the Wilderness Act. I think most people will not really notice it's coming and going, but many will. And we sure are going to make the most of it here on the Wildside News. It's time we revisit the events that led to the creation of the world's first wilderness preservation system. And in the current political climate, it seems as if people may view the Wilderness Act as something that grew from a bunch of hippies in the 60s. Nothing could be farther from the truth, and we're going to set the record clear. The enactment of the Wilderness Act was carried out by a bunch of old warriors, part of that greatest generation that is celebrated because of their involvement in World War II. Well, it was that greatest generation that as well saw fit to preserve in America the lands that are the birthplace of freedom, the place where freedom reigns, where truth prevails, and that is a tribute to the mystical significance of the universe. Its beginnings come from a long succession of American legends: Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, Walt Whitman, the painters like Thomas Moran and Albert Bierstadt, and then the emergent iconoclasts like John Muir and the poetic visions of Aldo Leopold. The impact of these voices and visions on an emergent 20th century was born from a sense of freedom, and somehow, through the great wisdom of those crafters of legislation, 40 years ago, the Wilderness Act became law. Today's show is dedicated to this moment. You will hear from three of America's leading wilderness visionaries. We begin with Doug Scott, with the Campaign for America's Wilderness, who is going to join us shortly and tell us what his years in the wilderness of wildlands preservation has taught him about the future of wilderness. Then we hear from Professor Rod Nash, America's foremost wilderness historian, who will inform you about the emergence of American wilderness and visions of wilderness for the future generations. And in our third segment, we talk with Dr. Bonnie Geisel from Yosemite, whose sensitive immersion into the spirit of nature guides her to find means to share that spirit for generations to come. And so, for this special edition of the Wildside News, I have this special edition of the news. And now, the news.
When I'm not on the road doing concerts, there's nothing I like more than getting out into the wilderness. This is Bonnie Raitt. Whether it's walking through an amazing ancient bristlecone pine forest, gazing up at the star-filled desert sky, or hiking along the rim of a red rock canyon, wilderness lets us find peace and solitude, as well as challenge ourselves. In wilderness, you can hear again the truest sounds of this country, the call of a loon, the growl of a grizzly. In wilderness, you can feel the wind across your face or dip your toes into clean, cool water from a mountain stream. It's part of what we share as Americans, no matter where we live or what we do. America's Wilderness Act turns 40 this year. Take time to get out and enjoy this wild legacy. It's a gift to leave our children and theirs.
Help preserve our wilderness. Call 877-604-6646 or visit leaveitwild.org. Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Wilderness.
That was Bonnie Raitt. The greatest people in the world love our planet and love wilderness. So, just a few reminders, by the way. If you haven't been to the Wildside News website, go there. It has a brand new look. It's a lot more user-friendly. It's an exciting place to go. That's www.wildsidenews.com. And for sure, send me an email once in a while. I love to hear from our listeners. So let's begin the celebration of the 40th anniversary of the birth of the American Wilderness System. I want to welcome to this show a John Muir of our time, Doug Scott, who is the policy director of the Campaign for America's Wilderness. Doug is an on-the-ground advocate, has helped direct wilderness campaigns for decades, has served with the Wilderness Society and the Sierra Club. Doug, welcome to the Wildside News.
Sydney, what a day for getting ready to celebrate.
You know, what are your thoughts about wilderness as you look at tomorrow? Tomorrow is the 40th anniversary. I'm just wondering what a guy like you is thinking about.
I'm thinking about something that William O. Douglas, a wonderful Supreme Court justice, said on the subject about the time the Wilderness Act passed. He said, "We look backward at a time when we had more wilderness than we needed, and we look to a future when all that we preserve will not be enough." And that's the thought that animated those who crafted and struggled to see the Wilderness Act become law 40 years ago tomorrow.
You know, it did. It started out at 9 million acres, and now we're at 106 million acres. Is that enough?
Who knows what enough is? I have an opinion. You have an opinion. Who gets to decide what enough is? Well, thanks to the Wilderness Act, that decision is put where it ought to be, in the hands of our elected representatives in Congress. They decide about every acre that receives this highest form of protection under our laws, wilderness areas, on our federal lands, now in 44 states. I'm content to let the Congress decide what's enough. Year in, year out, in laws signed by every president, the most laws signed by Ronald Reagan, Congress has added, since the day the Wilderness Act was signed at 9 million acres, 97 million more acres of land, extending from one area in Alaska, one expanse unbroken by roads, of 13 million acres, to a 5-acre island in Florida, and a 3,700-acre swamp 26 miles from Times Square in New Jersey. This is a fabulous success story, and the success has only begun.
A lot of people have been involved in this. As I said in my opening, it's taken millions of years to pass this law, and a lot of that grew really, truly from the American spirit, and we're going to talk about that in some other segments, and I know you could go on endlessly about that. But, you know, you have a new book called The Enduring Wilderness that's put out by Fulcrum Publishing. And in that, you certainly do cover the full spectrum of the history of the Wilderness Act. And one of the things that intrigued me was the way in which you seem to really mention the role of the artists and the poets and the writers. And, you know, I think that's an interesting concept. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
You know, to go back to your question about how much is enough wilderness to preserve, we could convene a panel of distinguished botanists and zoologists and ecologists and talk about that. We could also convene a panel of poets. I'm on the poet side. These are places for the spirit. This isn't just your snowmobile versus my hiking boots. This isn't just about recreation, although millions of Americans treasure their adventures in these wild expanses. This is about all the other values of wilderness: clean air, clean water, giving wildlife the home and the right to exist on their own terms, restraining our impulse to develop and change everything about nature. And now 4.7% of all the land in the United States. That's a momentous achievement. And the poets, you mentioned Thoreau, the essayists, you mentioned John Muir, that were the guiding lights in this work. They created the perception that wilderness was something to be valued and not just for recreation. Thoreau said every town ought to have a wilderness, 500 acres, 1,000 acres, as a part of their village life, as a part of their civic duty. Well, Morristown, New Jersey, has a 3,700-acre wilderness preserved by this law.
You know, the writers, I think, were the people, particularly writers and artists, who began this process. And in your book, as I say, you talk about that. I want to read a little something here. It's a quote by President Lyndon Johnson, because, as I say, this wilderness was not created by a bunch of kind of outdoor woodsy hippie types. These are the icons of our society. He said, "To the pioneer of history, the wilderness was a foe to be conquered, so that he might make farms and pastures out of the endless forests. Today's pioneer has a new purpose, to preserve some remnants of that wilderness from the onrush of modern civilization." And he goes on. But the point is, this is we are the new pioneers in crafting a better world. This is new turf for us, because we're at a place we've never been to, and that is where the wilderness begins.
Absolutely. And if you were to name the names of some of the members of Congress who were centrally involved in writing and enacting the Wilderness Act 40 years ago, you would name Senator Hubert Humphrey of Minnesota, which has a million-acre wilderness area on its northern boundary. You would name John Saylor, conservative Republican of Pennsylvania, where in Pennsylvania we have two wonderful wilderness areas and more under consideration on a national forest there. You would name Senator Clinton Anderson of New Mexico. There's a 10,000-acre wilderness proposal sponsored bipartisanly by both New Mexico senators and bipartisanly by members of the House delegation, pending in Congress right now, ready to be enacted this year. You would mention the name of Frank Church, great wilderness and conservation and peace advocate from the state of Idaho. I was just in the Selway Bitterroot Wilderness in Idaho a few weeks ago, thinking of Senator Church and his huge contribution to this work. Senator Thomas Kuchel, Republican of California, the Senate Republican Assistant Leader, who was an advocate and sponsor of the Wilderness Act from the day it was introduced in 1956 until the day he left the Senate, having helped place numerous areas in California under the protection of this law. Most of those people I named are Westerners. This was a law written by practical-minded people, and Sidney, they handed the key to us. They said, if we are going to build a wilderness system worthy of our great American spirit, it's going to be ordinary people. And this law gives ordinary people the right and the opportunity to say, I love this canyon. I love this valley. That mountain is a part of my life. And I am going to practice democracy. A waitress in a casino in Nevada. A hardware dealer in a small town in Montana. There are thousands of stories of people like them whose work has led to the protection of a wilderness area now protected with the full strength of statutory law passed by the Congress and signed by the President of the United States. That's an amazing achievement. I often think that in the work of continuing to urge and support the preservation of additional wilderness areas in which we work, along with the Sierra Club and the Wilderness Society and the National Wildlife Federation and the Isaac Walton League, to back local people who work out these proposals, that in that work what we're really doing is fighting cynicism. You know, our society says to us in so many ways, you can't make a difference. Well, that's nonsense. And 106 million acres now protected by the Wilderness Act, that is the story. All these iconic leaders, you to be sure, but it's the story of the waitress. It's the story of the hardware dealer. And well, people like them all across America.
Your passion besides wilderness, but it really has emerged into the people side of this, the people story. And you know, one of the most interesting things that I guess I kind of knew this, but I guess I didn't, and that is the fact that actually citizens have the right. I find this so amazing that the crafters of the Wilderness Act built into this a protection for us, the small d democracy people, and that is to say that citizens have the right to take their wilderness proposals directly to Congress. Talk about that.
Well, in mid-September, the many organizations, grassroots groups from Utah and Pennsylvania and Alaska and all over the country will assemble in Washington to take this wilderness message to the Congress and to the national leadership. And we'll be having a big celebratory dinner, and we'll be having a big reception on Capitol Hill. And it won't be the paid lobbyists in the forefront. It will be the college professor from West Virginia. It will be the 84-year-old housewife from suburban Seattle. These will be the people that will be there speaking from their heart about places they know and love intimately. And the power of that, I have to tell you that in 35 years of doing this work and spending an awful lot of time not in the wilderness but in the halls of Congress, I emerge from my experience more patriotic, more a believer that practicing democracy works, because I know the story of what these kinds of ordinary, everyday people have accomplished to protect areas for all time, perpetuity. That's not our children's children or grandchildren. That's forever. Now, nobody can predict the future. These areas can be changed, but the power of the Wilderness Act is there to protect them.
Doug Scott, we're at the end of the show. The Enduring Wilderness is his new book, put out by Fulcrum Publishing. Check that out. There's so much there. Doug, thanks for being with us on the Wild Side News.
Sydney, a pleasure.
When we return, Professor Rod Nash continues our celebration of wilderness at Fort Knox.